Ray, how are you? Thanks very much
good
for having me
in
again.
Good to see you
too, man.
Yeah, now we can't assume that everybody heard us the last time, so we need to sort of fill in the gaps for people. So you're a comedian.
I am.
Now you're an actor.
Yeah, an award-winning actor.
An award-winning actor. That yeah, has happened since
that's
we
happened
met.
Since, yeah,
so tell,
yeah.
us the, tell us about that first, then, the examination. So it was in the Fringe in 2019.
Yeah, we'd done the Dublin Fringe in 2019 and we got the opportunity to go over and do half of the Fringe in Edinburgh as well. But I'll bring you back to 2019 in the Dublin Fringe. We got a run in that and we got nominated for Best Production and I got nominated for Best Performer at the Dublin Fringe Festival, which I kind of was gone, you know, sketch, pulling a kind of a bit of a mad face. Because if I be honest, I suffer with low self-esteem and low self-worth and I've kind of carried that through life, but I've found ways of combating and kind of getting over it. And I've got a really, really supportive partner who kind of brings me away from that and says, look, you got to look at what you're doing and take the positives out of that. So anyway, got nominated for Best Performer and Best Production, as we said. The awards were in Whelan's. That Sunday morning, I had genuinely forgotten about it. My partner says, look, you're up for this nomination. Are we going to go in? And I was like, do you really want to go in? Because I'm amongst these people from theatre and who are acting years and years and years. And I kind of says, there's no way I'm going to win this. So I went in and it got read out. It got best performer and I won it. When they called my name out, because I've never won anything in my life. I've never won an argument, like, you know. So when they called my name out, I was literally gobsmacked. I didn't know what to say. They brought me up to the podium to say a few words and I just dedicated it to people, you know, who are suffering with addiction and maybe struggling in really hard times in their life to say, well, come here, if I can get myself out of the gutter and get myself to this place in life that, you know, there's hope and there's a possibility for everybody. And I knew when I got the nomination and I got the round of applause by all the people that were there, because a lot of the people had came and seen the play in the Project Arts Theatre, which it will be on again in April for 6 nights. I knew they were really, really happy for me and I felt that I belonged somewhere and it was very, very emotional.
Wow.
And I still have the award at home. I still look at it sometimes and kind of laugh to myself, but you know what? I was obviously the man for the nomination and they gave it to me and I won it.
When I say it's your play, you're in it.
It's
written
not,
by
yeah.
Gary and Phelim. And Gary and Phelim interviewed 60 prisoners, past and present.
Yes.
And they thought of you because you
and
have.
I'll tell you what happened, right? They didn't think of me. What
didn't
happened was, they wrote the bulk of the play. I wrote some of the play with them. And what happened was they were looking for somebody. It was meant to be a one-man play. So they went into Mountjoy Prison and they done interviews along with a professor from DCU called Dr. Catherine, Professor Dr. Catherine, I keep calling her doctor. She's not a doctor. Catherine Cox, she's a criminologist.
Right.
So along with Warwick University over in the UK, they amalgamated together and they started interviewing lifers in Mountjoy Prison and asking them about the treatment in the prison. And, you know, it's just general stuff that turned into conversations about their crimes, the welfare, what they're living in, what the conditions are like, how they are now as a human being to compare to what they were like, you know, post-crime and, you know, what happened along the way. So then they were looking for somebody to do the play. And they went and they asked a music teacher called Jerry Hendrix, relative to Jimmy. they went and seen him. Jerry is a very, very special person and was very good to me when I was in prison, music-wise, because I fancied myself as a bit of a singer as well. And he had his brother-in-law was in the Miami Show Band, who was one of the guys that was murdered up the north, and his guitar was left to Jerry. And to be honest with you, it couldn't have been left to a better fella because he can play the thing blindfolded. So they said to him, who would you recommend to play this part? We're thinking of doing a one-man play. And he says, well, the first guy comes off the top of my head, he says, a fella called Willie White. He said he was in here, he says, a great character, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, the power of social media, I got a message on Twitter from Phelim Cannon. Hi, I'm Phelim Cannon, part of Broken Talkers, myself and Gary Keegan. We're doing this piece on prison and we're wondering, would you like to get involved in us? It's a one-man play. Would you give us a bit of your time and come in and see us? I said, fine. Exchanged phone numbers, made the call, went in and seen them. They had a little office in the Dublin Fruit Markets, which is now torn down and new offices, the way the country is going. And we went in and we spoke about it. I thought the play was written already, that I would just come in, and it was far from it. They had the ingredients for it, which were all there, but we just needed to sit down and start putting the recipe together to cook it. So I gave my experiences of where I'd been, you know, psychiatric hospitals, living on the streets, being in prison.
And just for people who don't know your story, so you were born in Ballymun. You were sniffing glue from a very young age, eight or so.
Yeah.
And then it went on to
progressed
cannabis.
Yeah, then, All that stuff.
LSD, then
heroin, crack cocaine, homeless on the streets, psychiatric hospitals. As I say, I was in three psychiatric hospitals. Some may call it a psyche hat trick. you know, so yeah, that's probably the best joke they'll get out of here this morning or this afternoon, I should say. Yeah, but yeah, come here. I can probably make light of it and we can have a laugh about it. But I mean, at the time, it was
horrific.
Really, really very serious. I got drug psychosis over in England from taking a lot of drugs, mainly smoking weed, which a lot of guys these days and girls think that is really harmless. I got drug psychosis. I ended up in a situation that was very frightening for me and for other people. And I ended up in a psychiatric intensive care unit for 7 months in London. Didn't know what was going to happen. Eventually got out and done the same thing again. Ended up in Dundrum in the Central Mental Hospital. I ended up in Vincent's then on the Richmond Road. And it was just, you know, carnage. Then started going to prison, start using intravenously.
In prison?
In prison and on the outside, and done all the things I said I'd never done. Tormented my family, stole from my family, and done loads of stupid things. Eventually ended up on a drugs charge. Got extradited home from London in 1997 and received 5.5 years with a review after 3.5, and got out and got into a 12-step program, and I've been clean since. I'm actually clean 21 years, please God, on Monday.
Wow.
So I've turned.
What do you think when you look back at that time? And I know because you're doing interviews that you're forced to remember it. But away from that, when you're in your quieter moments of an evening, we all do that. The mind drifts and we start remembering things. How do you feel on those occasions?
Do you know what, Ray? I actually feel very, very lucky. I feel very fortunate. I feel blessed. It's a lottery for people that are in addiction. It's really, really a lottery. I personally think, and I'm not throwing stones at the government by any stretch of the imagination, but I think they could be doing an awful lot more. I think the revolving door of prison should be a thing of the past for people that want to get clean. I think that the money that it costs to keep a prisoner in prison could be really halved if the government looked at these properties that were empty around the city and got guys that were in recovery, say 10 years plus, that are back in mainstream society, that are paying taxes, that are going about their day-to-day
life. Somebody like you.
Exactly. Right. And the government trained them up, got them into these houses and got these people then who wanted to get clean from the drugs courts and put them on a 6-month programme, put them into these houses, give them all the skills to go back and live, probably put them in touch with, let's say, the Peter McFerry Trust to get them a little flat, and then get companies who would donate, you know, to give them work.
So it's 21 years since you've been in the prison system. But back then, I suppose, it was a lot more about incarceration than rehabilitation.
Yeah, but it's very much still the same,
right?
I mean, it's like so, and it's hard to say, but I mean, there's a lot of drugs in prison. You'll still get drugs in prison. And
can I just ask you, because I know people are shouting at the radios now. So your addiction led you to crime?
Yes.
That's because you have to feed your habit?
Yes.
Okay. Now, since we spoke the last time, I've read an awful lot about trauma. I've spoken to a lot of people about trauma. And you know, a lot of people agree that over 50% of addiction is caused by some sort of trauma.
Definitely.
And you know that?
Yes.
And have you?
I have suffered with trauma.
Yeah.
I've suffered with childhood trauma. Stuff that went on at home when I was a kid, yeah. Definitely 100%. And I used and I took drugs, as people said, you know, would say I was out of my head. I took drugs to get out of my head from the stuff that was going on inside, without a shadow of a doubt. I would totally agree with that. And I think, you know, you've got to go back and look at your past, and you've got to delve into your past, and you've got to see what triggered you to use? I know you've done a lot of walk around stuff like that. And luckily enough, I've got a 12-step program that, you know, I avail of on a regular basis. Like, and that's why I'm here. Now, if getting up in the morning and going down the end of the garden and hugging a log keeps you clean, I don't really care.
Yeah.
Look, the way I'm doing it may not be the right way for somebody else, but I found something that works for me. So obviously, if it's worked the last 21 years, I'm going to keep doing
it. And tell me about your dad and your relationship with your dad.
My relationship with my dad from a very young age, excuse me, was a horrible relationship. My father was a very violent man towards my mother and was a big drinker. My early years with my father, I would be very resentful and very hateful towards this man. And I actually thought at one stage later in life that I was actually going to murder him. And I didn't. I can say, you know, I never raised my hand to my father. Eventually, when I got into recovery, I delved into my father's past. I was actually afraid to ask my father about his own past. So I went to my uncles and I went to my aunties and asked. And I'd done a bit of homework there. And then I went back to him. And when I unraveled what went on in his family when he was a kid, coming from a family of 16 children, and the stuff that went on in his home, which was really, my trauma would be, you know, would be like going to Disneyland compared to where my father was as a kid. So I really understood then why it was the way it was for us.
But that's the cycle then, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And in a way, you have broken the cycle.
100%. I mean, I learned in recovery to accept this man and to love this man, and we cultivated an amazing...
Did you?
Yeah, I'm getting a bit upset.
Sorry.
We cultivated a great relationship, and when he passed away in 2016, it was just me and him, and it was very intimate. And I held him, and I told him that I loved him, and I did. And it wasn't about forgiveness. It was really about acceptance for the way that things were. And
I so you accepted why he was the way he was.
Of course I do.
That's big. That's a big thing to do.
But that's what recovery has done for me, Ray. It's given me that. It's given me that to be able to do that. The things I've done in my using on him probably would have weighed up the score.
Okay, yeah,
do you know what I mean?
It doesn't work like that. Yeah, I know.
But look, come here. It is the way it was. Come here, he passed away in 2016. I miss him terrible. I really, really do. I was only looking at photographs of him today and of a couple of videos on my phone, and I hold him precious. And now when I look back in my relationship with my father, I think I got 21 years. You know, I got 16. I got about 15 years, a good, really good years with my dad. And we had some great times and we had some great, you know, and we cried together and we laughed together. And it wasn't what I thought it'd be in recovery that, you know, we'd be sitting on a lake with the sun going down and fishing and all that. It wasn't that. But you know what? What it was enough for me. And, and we can't, you know, I don't listen to that song anymore, The Living Years, and get upset by it. Because I told him everything that I needed to tell him while he was alive.
Before
and I'm
died.
Very, very grateful for that.
Right, well, that's something, you know? Isn't it?
Yeah.
I asked you this question the last time, and it's a question that constantly comes up, and I don't have an answer. And it is that thing. It's a bit trite, I think, but it's like, you know, you take you and say, for example, your sister who died as well, Susan.
Yeah.
Both products of the same environment.
Yes.
And yet she went one way and you went the other way, addiction, crime. She went another way.
Yeah, exactly. She's never in trouble in the police in her life, and wasn't it?
Yes, and that's a question that people, and which the implication is then, that there's something inherently wrong with you because you went that way and Susan didn't. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And it's crazy because my sister in life would have become my mother and my father. She was my rock. She was where I found solace and found comfort. And even, she done a story with Paddy O'Gorman. It was called Cune for a Living. I don't know if you remember. It was on years ago. And I was actually on the run at the time over in England. And he interviewed her and they were talking about me. And she was saying, he says, where's your brother? Like, you know, and she goes, I suppose a real Bonnie Moore answer to that would have been, I'm not a rat, you know. But she didn't say that. She says, listen, he's not around at the minute. He's in a lot of trouble with the guards. And she was kind of talking. He said, well, why don't you abandon him? Like, you know, she says, I can't. I love him. Like, you know, and that was... really hit me very, very hard. And yeah, it is crazy. Look, she indicated off one road and I went off another way, but she probably found a way to deal with
it. Was she older than you or younger?
Yeah, she was older than me, yeah.
Susan. That matters as well, I think, because certain things happen in a home at certain times. And depending on your age, etc., they affect you in different ways.
Yeah, my sister got out a little bit earlier than me. My sister left the family home and she got herself a squat. When squats were kind of trendy in Ballymun, there was loads of them.
Right.
And she just kind of had enough at home. I think she felt a little bit guilty that I was kind of left behind. But when I got my feet and up on my feet a little bit older, I was gone as well. Like, sort of the family was well broken before my teenage years. Horrible, horrible, horrible to look at. I still have my mother.
And just talking to people in prison, was that a common theme? Or would you speak about that? Would you speak, if you were, like, when you were in prison, and all told it was about 7 years, I think, was it? Would you speak to other, inmates, is that what they call inmates? About their family life and how good or bad it was?
No, that doesn't happen in prison.
Doesn't it?
No, it's like, you're in a completely different world. It's like crime, or it's drugs, or Jesus, you couldn't be seen to be opening up your feelings in prison. You'd be very vulnerable.
Oh, all right.
You know, so it's horrible to have to say that, isn't it? That people, you know, especially men, can't talk about what's really going on for them.
Yeah.
And I mean, the 12-step program I'm on has given me that. It's given me the opportunity to be able to go into a room and tell people, listen, this is what's going on, this is how I feel, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose the play, in a sense, kind of,
I'm going to tell people about it just because we're in a deep conversation here. So just to take a little break from that and tell people that The Examination, which stars Willie White, award-winning actor.
And Gary Keegan.
Mermaids Arts Centre Bray, that's
down the road, the second night tonight.
And then next week, you're back on home territory.
The
Axis in Ballymun, 7th and 8th. Then the weekend after that, I think, it's Visual down in Carlow, 12th and 13th. Antoine Arts Centre in Dundalk, 15th. 19th, you're in the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary, 21st. Drieck, Branchtown, Drogheda Arts Centre, 23rd. And then, as you said, the Projects Arts Centre for 6 nights, April 26th to 30th. Right.
And if anyone wants to go to Paris, we're in Paris as well.
And I believe you're in Norway.
We're in Norway. Don't go to Norway. It's too far. I'm only back from Norway.
Right.
Paris is nice.
Willie was a star actor in Oliver many moons ago in the Comp and Ballymun. Well done, Willie.
And I was on Anything Goes with Angus McInerney in here. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Name dropper. What an honest and humble guy your guest is. It's great to think there's a light beyond darkness for everyone. For a guy with low self-esteem and self-confidence, he has surely climbed back up the ladder to show us all anything is possible. Best of luck, says Des.
Is there anyone there I owe money to, Ray?
My partner's 2 years clean and sober today. I met him 1 month after he left rehab. We've now bought our first home and he started his own business employing two others. He has great relationships now and family and friends, and I could not be more proud of him.
Brilliant.
There is a great life to be had after recovery. Well done, Willie. You have the things that your dad would have aspired to.
Do you know what? It's crazy because my dad always had respect and admiration for fellas who didn't drink, who didn't smoke, and had their own house. And I have all them three things.
Will you stay with me? I have to take a quick commercial break. I'll be back with Willie after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Radio 1.
Willie White's still with us. That man who survived drug addiction, that's you, Willie, is very articulate and speaks much sense. There is too much time given to the lock 'em up and throw away the key lobby. Revolving door prison is too costly on several fronts. Addiction is complex. There may be a small number of prisoners who there is currently no other option. But Queen Victoria is dead well over 100 years. Time to get more enlightened. Pat in Cork. And I mentioned this book over and over again. It's a Humankind. Is the guy named Bergman, I think. Bergman is his name. Anyway, he cites the Norwegian. I think it's the Norwegian, funnily enough, their prison system. To a lot of people, it would seem like a bit of a holiday camp, but it works for them. They don't reoffend. They come out and they contribute to society in a big way. You know, people who've been through their prison system. So it looks to me, just from reading that and looking at the Irish system, that it is a little bit antiquated, needs a little bit of tweaking, I would imagine.
Well, maybe the Irish prison system should go over and have a look at what they're doing and, you know, take off their experience and bring it back here, like, you know.
Yeah. I just better say that the HSE Drugs and Alcohol Helpline is 1800-459-459, 1800-459-459. So it's nearly every person that sits in front of me now is a sea swimmer. Like we've had, I think you're the fifth person this week. Now, we didn't say it every day because it become sort of like nearly that you had to be a sea swimmer. But we had Constance Short on, she's a sea swimmer.
Lovely.
We had Anne talking about little Michael. She's a sea swimmer. The lady yesterday, who's her first novel, sea swimmer, we didn't mention. You're a sea swimmer.
I am, yeah. I'm actually a sea swimmer. I'm not a sea stander. So there's people right, that get into correct. The sea every day and stand. They're sea standards. I'm actually a sea swimmer. I get in and have a bit of a swim.
Brilliant.
You know, but I started this through the lockdown as well. I done a podcast with a guy, a friend of mine called John Lally, a really nice fella. And he does a podcast in his van and it's very effective. So he went down, he says, the condition of doing the podcast is you have to get into the sea.
Right.
And my whole thing about that was, no, you know, I used to look at people getting in the sea and go, gives him a straight jacket. And I also says, if you ever see me with a dry robe on, come up on the path and run me over. And my daughter last year for me 50th gave me a dry robe. I was like, no, I can't wear it.
You see? But it's all about change.
Here, listen, I went down, I got in the sea.
Sea swimmer, so we've run out of time. Willie, you're always welcome here. The examination is all over the country. Can I just point people towards Lynn Ruan's new podcast, Conversation on the Margins.
Brilliant. And she's an amazing woman as well.
Conversation on the Margins. That's it from us. Willie White, you're an amazing man. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back on Monday. Have a great weekend. And whatever you're doing, do it safely.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.